It's nearly 11:30, time for Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals. Kicking off the show as usual with an animal tune. This is The Bad Plus with Frog and Toad here on WMNF. This is The Bad Plus with Frog and Toad, an animal song of sorts, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa and streaming live via the station website WMNF.org. My name's Duncan Strauss, and I'll be here till noon today with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Indeed, the show primarily seeks to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your phone calls and emails, from assorted other sources. We're also quite interested in celebrating animals through music, comedy, and other means. We always aim for a pretty spirited balance of those elements. You can readily glean if you care to visit our website, talkinganimals.net. Indeed, the website offers archives of all our past shows, including our initial programs here on WMNF, which have featured an array of illustrious figures from the animal world or notable folks from other fields who have legitimate ties to animal welfare. Today's edition very much extends the show's tradition of speaking with fascinating folks from all walks of animal life, with the conversation we'll have momentarily with our guest, the internationally renowned ethicist, philosopher, and author Peter Singer. In fact, we're so eager to speak with Professor Singer that we've reconfigured the program's structure today. The Animal News and Announcements and Comedy Corner will be presented after our conversation with him today. So allow me to quickly outline some details about him before jumping into our chat. Currently the Ira W. DeCamp Professor of Bioethics at Princeton University, Professor Singer's perhaps best known as the author of 1975's landmark Animal Liberation, a highly influential work which has prompted many to view him as the father of the modern animal rights movement. His latest book, published in May and co-authored with Jim Mason, is The Way We Eat, Why Our Food Choices Matter. While many of his views and writings have spurred considerable debate and controversy, there's little argument over his significance. Singer was named one of the world's 100 most influential people by Time magazine in 2005. The New York Times wrote, "No other living philosopher has had this kind of influence," while the New Yorker described him as the most influential philosopher alive. Professor Singer will deliver a lecture entitled One World, The Ethics of Globalization, tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Eckerd College. But right now he's here with us on WMNF. As always, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. Or you can email us any questions or comments at dj@wmnf.org. So now let's welcome Professor Peter Singer. Are you there, Professor Singer?
I am indeed.
Great. Welcome to Talking Animals. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you were sort of asked to provide an abstract of the way we eat, what would that sound like? What just kind of a short summary from your standpoint?
The book looks at the eating habits of three different families, one of which is goes down to Walmarts or fast food places and buys what a lot of Americans buy there. The second family we call conscientious omnivores. They're people who eat a wide range of foods, including animal products, but they try to use some conscientious or ethical standards in what they choose. And the third family is a strictly vegan family, no animal products at all. So what we do is we look at what they eat and we then ask ethical questions. Why choose this rather than that? What are the reasons for making these choices? So we're really looking at a whole range of different ethical questions, not just about the treatment of animals, but including those questions.
Sure.
In what we eat.
And how did you select those families? I imagine there were other families that were sort of contenders as you started off on this project, and I know there was a couple that you opted not to to include. What were the choices made, the criteria for those families you did end up focusing on?
Well, we found a number of families through personal contact, eating a variety of different diets.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we contacted them as to how willing they were to become part of this book and
sure.
become public in that way. And then we actually ended up with more than three who were willing and would have been suitable. But when we started writing it up, it just became too complicated, and we felt it was better to keep to these three main streams.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we just wanted three families that sort of pretty well represented.
Yeah, across the spectrum.
Those different approaches.
Sure.
That's what we got.
And in doing the book, I mean, you've been obviously observing and writing on various aspects of animal liberation and welfare for three decades. Nonetheless, were you surprised by some of the things as you trace back what these families purchased and ate? Were you surprised by some of the things that you and co-author Jim Mason found and saw in collecting the research for this book?
Well, because it is, you know, some years since we did this kind of research, I guess we did see that basically the corporate takeover of small independent farmers has continued apace, that if you compare the situation, say, with pig farming to when I wrote Animal Liberation 30 years ago, although even then there were a lot of big corporate farms, still there were 10 times as many pig farmers in the U.S. as there are today.
Mm.
There's only one-tenth left. 90% of them have gone. But that doesn't mean we produce fewer pigs. In fact, we produce more pigs. So the remaining 10% have just grown and taken over the production of the 90%.
So right. It's who's doing the producing, I guess, at this point.
It's who's doing it. It's the dominance of big corporations. That's certainly, you know, one thing that surprised us, I guess, on the bad side.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing on the more positive side is that there is a lot more interest in ethical food now. Organics is the fastest growing section of the American food industry. That's promising.
Mm-hmm.
There are also a lot more possibilities for cage-free eggs available in America, although not really much in the way of truly free-range eggs, that is, birds who really are outside on grass. But there is also, I guess, a lot of interest in more humanely produced and more sustainably produced food, like Niman Ranch pork, for example. So that was interesting. And of course, there were giant supermarket chains like Whole Foods in particular,
sure.
who are promoting this and doing something to change their customers' purchasing habits.
Right, and again, as you noted in that book, and we've certainly seen elsewhere, the CEO of that company just seems... you know, even initially he might resist some comments, criticism, suggestions. He does seem to, if not immediately, take them to heart and then, you know, at least in many cases, implement them.
He's definitely open to new ideas, yes. And he is himself a vegan, which is interesting, although he says, look, he can't run Whole Foods as a vegan business.
Right.
You know, they would lose too many of their customers who would want to go elsewhere to buy their meat, and then they wouldn't, you know, come back to Whole Foods. But he is definitely taking a lead in producing more, I guess, you know, what some people would say less cruel standards of producing meat than exist today.
And with Mackie there being a vegan, the reference you just made, maybe you could address in terms of the impact on our environment, on our world, some of the key differences that you kind of illuminate in the book between those who buy and eat meat and fish, particularly obviously factory farm, and those who buy food as part of a vegetarian diet. Let's not even stack the deck by necessarily making it vegan, although we can, and or much less dumpstering, which I found interesting. Maybe we'll come back to that too. But maybe you could just sort of give a little bit of an overview on that.
Yes. Well, I mean, obviously one difference is in terms of the impact it has on animals. I think that there's no doubt that intensive farming is the largest source of suffering that humans impose on animals, just in terms of the sheer numbers. It dwarfs things like the use of animals in labs or in the fur industry or sport hunting or anything like that. Factory farming just overwhelms it, sort of nearly 10 billion animals killed each year in the United States alone. So, you know, people who are buying those products are supporting that industry, and that's a major ethical factor in terms of the treatment of animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a major environmental factor on a whole lot of grounds, and, you know, I could take up all the rest of the time we have on the program just on that, but I will only mention one, and this is something that surprised us, I guess, because it's a study that I hadn't seen before we began the research, and that is that the single thing that an American family could change that would most reduce their impact on global warming, that is, most reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, is not, as you might imagine, to dump their car and switch to a hybrid, you know, like a Prius or something that gets great fuel economy, although that's obviously a good thing to do.
Sure.
But they could actually make a bigger difference if they dump their factory farm diet and were to switch to a vegan diet. That would reduce their greenhouse gas emissions more because of all the oil that goes into growing the grain, which in turn is fed to these factory-farmed animals who waste maybe 80%, maybe even 90% in some cases, of the food value of that grain before giving us back their flesh or their eggs or milk. And that's why it's such a wasteful system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another big ethical plus that says we should not be eating these diets that are so heavy in animal products.
And also, I guess, as part of that, since a lot of the book and just a lot of the thinking on these sort of topics, you know, necessarily falls along a continuum, that even if someone didn't feel like they were ready tomorrow or later today even to embrace a vegan diet, but along the lines of what you said, even stepping into a vegetarian diet would still reduce greatly the kind of gigantic waste, which I just don't know that a lot of people, you know, if they're not reading a book like yours, have reason to really ponder. I mean, it's striking.
That's certainly true, but let's just be a little bit more specific.
Okay.
I think if someone were to say, you know, if a standard meat eater were to say, I'm going to go vegetarian,
mm-hmm.
and instead of the meat that I've been having, I'm going to have a lot of omelets or
right.
a lot of
okay.
you know, cheese fondue or something
sure.
like that,
right.
I don't think they would be achieving much.
Right.
Neither in terms of saving animal suffering, at least if they're buying eggs from standard factory farm battery cage produced eggs,
sure.
Nor in terms of the environment. So there has to be a net reduction of animal products, but certainly if you cut out the meat, stay with a modest amount of eggs and dairy products that perhaps you already were eating anyway, not increasing that, and replace the meat with a lot of plant foods of various kinds. I think then definitely you're making a big contribution.
Sure. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. We're speaking with philosopher and author Peter Singer, whose latest book is The Way We Eat, Why Our Food Choices Matter. You can join the conversation by calling us at 813-239-9663, or you can email a question or comment to dj@wmnf.org. And along those lines, Professor Singer, for the people who haven't read the book, I think I wonder if some of them might find it sort of counterintuitive initially along the lines of what we were just talking about, that beef or beef cattle in a way sort of have somewhat better lives than those of a factory farm pigs or chicken, because I think there's a lot of people who, my impression at least, is that a lot of folks think, well, chickens have it better, so go through sort of a less gruesome path to our dinner table. So, ergo, if I eat more chicken, I'm sort of, you know, helping the situation at least in a modest way.
I think that's actually the reverse of the truth.
Of course it is. Yeah, that's what I mean about counterintuitive. I think.
I mean, I don't know quite why. I guess, you see, some people said, and I still get this, people say, oh, well, I don't eat red meat. And probably people who don't eat red meat made that change, basically, because of their health. They think that they want to eat a meat that's lower in fat or cholesterol or something like that.
Sure.
Maybe some people made it because they think that somehow cows suffer more than chickens. But
mm-hmm.
I don't really see that. And yes, beef cattle, at least for the first 8 months of their lives, are out on the range. They have a reasonably good life, and they are converting grass, which we can't eat, to food. It's only when they get into the feedlot, which unfortunately in this country, is for quite a long time,
mm-hmm.
at least 6 months and sometimes more. Then it's a very wasteful system of feeding them on grain, because cattle are not very good at converting grain to meat.
Sure.
Plus, I don't think it's much of a good life for them either.
Right.
Packed into that dirt feedlot in all sorts of weather with no shelter, usually from either the sun or the snow and blizzards.
Right.
So I think that there's certainly still objections to beef, but I definitely think chickens suffer a lot more. They're indoors all the time because they're so of so little value individually.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if quite a few of them die off during the process,
and
there's no individual care for them. Whereas, someone who's raising cattle doesn't want to lose a whole steer. That's a significant amount of economic loss. So they will get a vet to look at a steer that's not doing well. Whereas no vet will ever look at an individual chicken in a chicken shed. I mean, there's probably 20,000 to 30,000 birds in that shed.
Right.
No one can look at them as individuals, and sometimes because they've been bred to grow so fast, their legs will just collapse on them, and they just lie there then on the floor. If they're not near food and water, they just slowly starve to death. But nobody sort of comes through and makes sure they're all right or gives them food and water or anything like that.
Yeah, it's such a staggering numbers game, I guess, at that point. But we do have a few calls. Let's take a call, if you wouldn't mind, Professor Singer.
Sure.
Hi, you're on WMNF with Peter Singer. Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Hello, go ahead. You're on WMNF with Peter Singer.
Yes, I'm calling from Lakeland, Florida.
Okay.
And I was just curious, I just called a few seconds of your show there, and I've always been curious, if someone were to consider, or were going to consider changing over to a vegetarian-style diet, I was just wondering if you could point somebody in the right direction as to how they might go about starting, and I'll listen on the air.
Okay. Dr. Singer? Professor Singer? Okay, looks like we may have lost him in the translation here, so we'll get him right back, and we'll just hear this in the meantime. Okay, Professor Singer, you've rejoined us.
I have.
Okay, I'm sorry we lost you there. But actually, the caller had called in and asked just if he were interested in sort of starting off on the path towards a veg diet, what steps you might recommend, and then he was going to take the your answer off the air, so we don't have him with us. But if you could maybe address that, and we'll see if we can even work in one more call. I know you have to go shortly for a meeting. But
what kind of diet?
Like a vegetarian. I think he sounds like he was currently an omnivore, carnivore type, right. And I think he's just looking maybe for some initial steps in the direction.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there's a lot of different things you can do. I mean, there's just so many great vegetarian and vegan cookbooks out now.
One or two you could recommend in particular, maybe, that...
I don't know that I'm really up to date with
okay.
With all of them now, no.
All right.
Sorry, we've had, the ones we've had around for a long time, and we
sort sure.
of have enough, really. Well, actually, there's a guy called... No, never mind.
Okay.
I get the name wrong.
Close call. Okay. Any just general first steps for someone who sounds like they're seriously considering heading that direction and maybe needs a little guidance?
Look, I think, there is a, huge range of vegetarian foods are out. I mean, there are convenience foods if you want to buy veggie burgers and things in supermarkets. There's a lot of great things you can do with tofu. I know it doesn't always have, the best reputation with people, but if you marinate it in a sauce, it's just wonderful for soaking up different flavors, soy flavors and other flavors as well. Plus, it's extremely healthy, high protein, low cholesterol, and so on. I do quite a bit with that. And there's lots of great bean dishes. You can get a healthy meal with a good, rich bean or lentil soup, something of that sort, and some good wholemeal bread and some salads. That can be the basis of a really easy meal. And the best thing about making soups and things is you can make up big pots of it and put it in the freezer, and then, you don't spend a lot of time cooking either.
Great, great. Well, I know you got to go. I just have one quick question that I think some people might be interested or at least somewhat familiar with your work that might be surprised at the same time, at least at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, that you don't live with animals. Has that been true at different times, or I imagine at some point maybe there have been animals that you've...
We've had some, especially mm-hmm. when my children were small. We, mm-hmm. we had a stray cat that we adopted, and we also had some pet rats, ex-lab rats that needed a good home. And rats are very affectionate and pretty easy to care for, companion animals, I have to say. So, I have had some. But,
yeah.
I'm interested in this issue because I don't like to see unnecessary suffering, and that's true whether it's humans or animals.
Sure.
I've never considered myself an animal lover, and I'm not the kind of person who really... needs or particularly desires to have animals around me all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's you're looking at it really from a more ethical.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I came to it actually as I was already a graduate student in philosophy when I got interested in these issues, and I came to it as an ethical issue as to how we ought to treat beings who are not human but can still capable of suffering. And
mm-hmm.
the interest I thought we were not giving enough attention to.
Well, great. I appreciate it. There's so many other things I was hoping to get to, and there were some callers that I know were hoping to ask you some questions, but maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Sure.
But meanwhile, the book is The Way We Eat, Why Our Food Choices Matter. And as a reminder, Professor Singer will be giving a lecture tomorrow night at Eckerd College entitled One World, The Ethics of Globalization. So we can give you more information about that at the end of the show. Thank you again for joining us today, Professor Singer, and Talking Animals.
Thanks a lot. It was good to be with you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, again, he will give that lecture at Eckerd College tomorrow night. It's at 7:30 in Fox Hall. For more information, it's 727-864-7979, or you can find out more about that on our website, WMF.org, under the Community tab. So let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Bill Engvall with a piece called Dorkfish on today's Comedy Corner here on WMNF.
See, I think we just try to figure out too much about animals. We should just leave them alone. I'll give you a great example. In the California desert, they found bones of a prehistoric porpoise. And they're saying it's interesting because this porpoise's upper jaw sticks out a lot further than his lower jaw. So I figure he's got to look like... And they're already trying to figure out if this upper jaw was used for, like, mating or catching fish. I'm thinking, what if it's just a goofy-looking fish? Like a dork fish. He's like, oh, this ain't the ocean. Woo, I better find me some water. Because can you imagine if you were fishing and you caught a dorkfish? Because your friends would be like, hey, man, What kind of fish is that? You'd be like, oh, nothing. Because you know that fish would stick his head out of that bucket. I'm a dork fish. He caught me on a corn dog. I was swimming underneath the ocean, and I said, what's a corn dog doing underneath the ocean? But you know me, boy. I love them damn corn dog, boy. Woo! I saw that bad boy. I bit it. Boom, I was in the boat. That's the last thing I know. Be pretty cool if they sold them in pet stores. Because you know they say pets always look like their owners? It's like you go over to your friend's house. Hey, Buford. What kind of fish is this? Dart fish? I'm just fixing to feed him. What do you feed a dork fish? Corn dog? Boy, they just gobble them up. But you got to take that stick out. They'll eat that stick.
Okay, that's Bill Engvall with a piece called Dork Fish. From his album of the same name, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF. The station website is WMNF.org. The show website is TalkingAnimals.net, where all our past programs are archived. There are pieces written about us, including some short things that ran recently in the Tampa Tribune and the Weekly Planet, pieces we've written, and more, including a new calendar of pet events taking place in and around Tampa, and a place to sign up for our email list. We can keep you posted on forthcoming guests and more. That's TalkingAnimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune, pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. There'll be a prize, a copy of Peter Singer's new book, The Way We Eat, to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies the song I'm playing now. It's Name That Animal Tune on WMNF. Okay, you are the winner. What's your name?
My name is Robert Rohrbeck.
Okay, Robert, if you don't mind holding, I will come back as soon as the show is over and get all your info so we can send you your prize. But congratulations, and
thanks
for listening to Talking Animals on WMNF.
Do I get a corn dog?
Well, I don't know, in light of the conversation we just had, et cetera, that's exactly in your prize package, but we'll certainly send you Peter Singer's book. Okay,
all right.
So stay on the hold, and we'll come back to you. Thanks. Okay, so I think we've just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I just want to quickly add that one of our callers that we weren't able to get on the air did have a couple of suggestions for the person who called in and wanted to see about getting started on the vegetarian spectrum. So there's a book called Transition to Vegetarianism by Rudolf Ballantyne that she recommended. And just generally, of course, start off with fish and fowl, and especially if you're in the red meat area, and go from there. But there's plenty of stuff online, and there's some really great books. And again, I would really recommend, as part of your reading, the new Peter Singer book, The Way We Eat, Why Our Food Choices Matter. So I want to thank Rob Laurie and others at WMNF for the opportunity to present Talking Animals today, and now really monthly here on WMNF, the second Wednesday of each month. We'll be back October 11th, November 8th, and so on. Hope you'll join me next time. And meanwhile, please visit our website, talkinganimals.net, and send any show-related email to talkinganimals@aol.com. Couple quick news items we might have time to squeeze in here. Lost Angels Animal Rescue is hosting dog adoptions at Petco from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on September 16th. Lost Angels is a nonprofit group that supports no-kill shelters. Petco is located at 13127 North Dale Mabry Highway in Tampa. For more information, visit lostangelsanimalrescue.org. And that's an example of the kind of event you'll find listed on the new calendar of Tampa Pet Activities and Events on our website, talkinganimals.net. And once again, our guest today, philosopher Peter Singer will be delivering a lecture entitled One World, Ethics of Globalization at Eckerd College tomorrow night, Thursday, September 14th at 7:30 p.m. in Fox Hall. More information, 727-864-7979 or on our website, WMNF.org, under the Community tab. So I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And we're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal song, courtesy of our music director, Flea. This is Matthew Sweet's version of the Flipper theme. Please stay tuned for NPR News, followed by Democracy Now! We'll return with another edition of Talking Animals, October 11th on WMNF Tampa. See you then.